All right, you're welcome back to the 9 till noon show. Some of your comments on some of the stuff we've been talking about in the first hour of the show in relation to the proposed 8-week suspension for Jim McGuinness, sideline suspension following the fielding of a player contravening the rules. Some of your comments this morning. The GEA would need to cop on. Kilmacud Crokes had 16 men on the pitch last year. What sanctions were put on them? I think it was a genuine mistake on Jim's part. If that's the case, is that all right? Should that mean the rules don't apply? Rules are rules and not meant to be broken, says another listener. What is it with the GEA? Do they think they don't have to go by the rules and regulations? Because that's the way they are acting. Did anyone watch the Tonight Show last night, says a caller. TD Neil Richmond said no one will tell us who will live in towns and villages around Ireland. A statement like that from the Taoiseach or Taoiseach is one thing, but from the TDs, many of whom are making money from the housing of IPAs and Ukrainians. So he said no one will tell us who will live in towns and villages. Does that mean it was his? I didn't see it. It's not a programme I'd watch. Is he saying that the public won't dictate, or I presume that's what he meant, yeah? Greg, strange how we can look after the foreigners by the thousands, but our nursing homes are going to close. Could you warn people to slow down coming down past Drumbo Avenue graveyard entrance? The road is very slippy. It's like a bottle. Oh, there's already a crash up there. The Gardaí and Council need to be notified and it needs to be gritted. Greg, my son arranged for a couple to rent my home while I was away. The people are presently 3 months in arrears in rent and have no intention of paying a penny of it. I've had to seek a solicitor at an added cost to me. When I inspected the house, it is being destroyed. I've been to solicitor and they tell me it's going to take months to get them moved out. Where is the law to protect me? Can anyone tell me the best way forward for me to sort this nightmare? I've spoken to people off air who've had issues with similar to this. It can be a very long and drawn out process. I'm not sure if it's a private arrangement without the involvement of the private resident tenancy board, the PSTB, is it? PTSB. I'm not sure if they can offer you any assistance or if it was done outside of their remit. But anyone out there who can give that listener some advice, let us know. We'll pass it on. A caller says, you recently spoke about mail being sent to Australia and not getting delivered. I had over £100 worth of stuff in it for my grandchildren. I sent it a year ago and it came back to my house this week undelivered. Lucky for me, I had a sender's address on it and hence it was returned to me. I resent it this morning, but this time I paid for tracking it at €36. So here's hoping. Yeah, fingers crossed indeed. Hi, Greg. I live in one of over 1,000 council houses affected by defective concrete. I was told by two senior council staff that funding has been requested for the housing department to rebuild affected council houses for the past 3 years. The funding has been refused on the basis that the minister does not want to be seen to be repairing social housing before resolving the private housing issue. Council tenants are being treated as less than second-class citizens. I think things are starting to move in that direction. I'm not sure what you were told, but that's your reading of it. But we did see tenders going out from the council before and over Christmas seeking contractors. As a voter, I'm really concerned about the number of civil actions being taken by high-profile Sinn Féin personnel against journalists and newspapers. Taken in the whole, it can only be seen as an attempt to stifle, by intimidation, any attempt to print material that they don't agree with. Going into a general election in the near future, one has to be concerned as to what sort of news media we would have if Sinn Féin were in power. For that reason, I definitely will be not voting for any Sinn Féin candidates. I'm glad that the judge in Belfast called Mr. Kelly's case for what it was. Okay, interesting. For God's sakes, keep warning people about the use of high-vis gear. Met a lady this morning walking with her back to traffic on the road off the footpath with dark clothing on at Navanie Bridge in Ballybuffet. Please, if you're out and about, it's so, so important. If you're listening, please make a note, if you're a walker, to walk in the correct manner, but please, please, please wear high-vis. Between Tully Rap and Whitecross on the main road in Lifford, there's a big pothole on the road. I'm just after busting a tyre. Other drivers, please be careful. Now, please take a picture of the pothole if you can, and your tyre, and the receipts for its repair. And you can make a claim against the council for the repair of that tyre, by the way, and any other damage caused to your car. Quite a number of people do so on an annual basis. It's not your fault. You're going to be out quite a few quid. The tyre might be shot. You could have to pay 80 to 180 euro for a new tyre. It sounds like that could be a situation that you could take up with the council. Back to the GEA. It was a very harsh decision for an outright ban, says this listener. We broke the rules. It was complete stupidity. I can't understand how they made such a mistake. The chat from the sidelines was that Rorty couldn't even play for his own team, Niamh Connell, as he was too young. Whoever's decision this was needs to stand up and apologise. Players have been working hard and now this. I wouldn't be suspending McGuinness. I'd be suspending the secretary, whoever else is in charge of registration. They didn't do their jobs. Players and supporters have been let down. But look, I mean, in terms of attributing blame, there is a rule there, whether we like it or not, and that rule was contravened. And I'm not sure what scope there is there in terms of punishment. Was this at the high end? Is it at the low end? Is this a set punishment? I'm not really quite sure. Anyway, 086 60 25,000. We'll talk about that a little later on in the show in a bit more detail as well. But we're going to take a break because when we return, it's Community Garda information.
The Community Garda information slot is brought to you by Sheridan Security Systems, protecting what you value most. Call today and get your zero wire alarm system from €299. Sheridan Security, 91 26025.
Okay, you're very welcome along to the 9 till noon show. Community Garda information for this Tuesday, the 9th of January, 2024. We have Garda Sergeant Eunan Walsh in studio with us, as always. Good morning, Eunan. Thank
morning,
you for
Greg.
Your time.
Morning, Greg. Happy New Year to you.
And same to you. And we're going to be talking to Detective Jared McCready. Good morning, Jared. We're going to be talking about advice, really, in relation to investment fraud and money muling. And we do talk about this from time to time, but still it remains an issue out there.
Good morning, happy new year to you. Yeah, it's a major issue, all right.
Okay, well, listen, we've got some good advice and some real world examples as well, which might help to get the message across. But we'll start with the appeals and other information from Garda Sergeant Eunan Walsh, and reiterating the Garda appeal in relation to the fatal road crash on the outskirts of Letterkenny.
Yes, Greg, this is renewing the appeal again in relation to the fatal collision which occurred last Friday evening at approximately 7 p.m. on the main Letterkenny to Kilmacrennan Road, the N56 as it's known. The collision involved a car and a pedestrian. And unfortunately, the pedestrian, whose name is Leila Hussein Ali, age in her 20s, was sadly pronounced deceased. And our thoughts and prayers are with the deceased and her family and friends at this time. And we're appealing for any witnesses to the collision to come forward. Any road users who have a dash cam and who were travelling on the N56 in the Illistran area between 6 p.m. and 7:15 p.m. last Friday, the 5th of January, we're asking them to make the dash cam footage available to Gardaí. And again, anyone who has information in relation to the collision is asked to contact Milford Garda Station on 07491 530 60, or again the confidential line 1-800-666-111.
Now, we're appealing in relation to a series of burglaries in different parts of the county. Shall we start in Letterkenny?
Yes, this is a burglary which occurred last week, Greg, in the townland of Creve, Letterkenny, on the Rock Hill area of Letterkenny. It occurred between 3 p.m. last Wednesday, the 3rd of January, and 12:10 a.m. on Thursday morning. So sometime late Wednesday afternoon or Wednesday night. So the front door of a private residence was forced open and entry was gained to the property. A number of rooms were ransacked and a safe was forced open within the property and the contents of the safe were stolen. And again, among the items stolen were substantial sums of cash and various items of jewellery. Some of the jewellery taken, one was a white gold diamond and sapphire engagement ring, a yellow gold and diamond wedding ring, diamond sapphire earrings, diamond drop earrings, circular diamond earrings with a red stone in the centre, and a men's bracelet with brown stones. So again, if anybody observed anything suspicious, any vehicles or people acting suspiciously in the area of Creve last Wednesday, to make contact with Gardaí at Letterkenny, 07491 67100, or again the confidential line 1-800-666-111. And again, we're appealing to jewellers and shop owners in the area or in the county to make contact with Gardaí if anybody should come to the store to have a similar type of jewellery valued or sold on. And again, anybody with relevant information, please contact the Gardaí.
Yeah, indeed. That's right across the region as well. Now, a burglary in Donegal Town.
Yes, this is a burglary that occurred in a yard in Spearstown, Donegal Town, last Thursday, the 4th of January, Thursday night time, between 10:30 p.m. and 11:05 p.m. Locks on the gate of the property were broken and entry gained, and 14 rolls of stay wire, that's the wire that's used to in the structural work, were stolen from the yard. Again, substantial value in that. So appeal to anybody who may have travelled in that area between 10 p.m. and 11:30 p.m. on the date, and who has dash cam, to make the footage available to Gardaí. And again, anybody who can assist with the information or the crime, to contact Gardaí at Ballyshannon, 07198 58530. That's 07198 58530.
And a little further south in the Merva area, another burglary.
This is burglary which occurred last night, Monday the 8th, Sunday night, Monday morning, between 12:55 a.m. and 1:25 a.m. So the burglary occurred at Merva area near the golf club. Entry was gained to a building via a rear window, and damage it caused within internal doors to get entry into steal property. A list of what may have been stolen is currently being compiled, and we will post the same onto our Facebook again. But we're appealing to anybody who has travelled in that area and who have may have observed any suspicious vehicles or activity to make contact with the Gardaí again in Ballyshannon, 07198 58530. And again, anybody in the Merva area between midnight and 2 a.m. and who has dash cam, to please make it available to Gardaí.
And it is a quiet rural area, and people in the vicinity would probably be somewhat familiar with the traffic you'd expect to see at that time.
Yeah,
so if anything stands out,
anything really untoward, a vehicle that they've seen that's not norm to the area, to make us aware of it.
All right, we're heading to Quigley's Point now.
Yes, this is a burglary that occurred in the White Castle area of Quigley's Point, Greg, Sunday night, the 7th of January, between 9:30 p.m. Sunday night and 9:30 a.m. the following Monday morning. So the locks in the shed in the house were forced open, and two chainsaws were stolen from the property. One of the chainsaws is black in colour, and the other is a still electric chainsaw, which is orange in colour. So they may be passed on. You may be asked, do you want to buy chainsaws or anything? So we're appealing for anybody who has any relevant information to contact the Gardaí in Buncrana, 07493 205 40, or again the confidential line, 1-800-666-111.
All right, a low loader taken from the Ballybofey area.
Yes, this is a yellow cane low loader trailer. The registration number is attached is 03DL2234. That's 03DL2234. And there's a photograph of the low loader, which was stolen, circulating through social media. It was taken from a yard in the Carrickmagrath area of Ballybofey last Monday, and between last 3 p.m. last Monday and 10 a.m. the following Tuesday morning, the 2nd of January. So sometime on New Year's Day. And obviously this would have most likely have been towed away by a tractor. So again, anybody who observed this trailer on the roads between those hours, we'd ask them to contact the Gardaí Letterkenny. And again, if anybody believes that they may have captured the trailer on their dash cam after it's been stolen, again, we ask them to make the footage available to us at 07491 67100.
Yeah, and it's pretty distinctive looking.
Yes, I've seen the picture myself.
The number plate may have gone amiss at this point, but you would probably notice if you had seen it. Right, all crime is despicable, but I think when you know places of religion or where people are laid to rest, it brings on a particularly sinister element to it.
Yes, and it's investigating the criminal damage, Greg, in the graveyard at St Union's Cathedral, the Diamond Rafoe, between Tuesday the 19th of December and Wednesday the 3rd of January. Now, we are aware that a number of incidents of criminal damage occurred. Damage was caused to 8 headstones within the graveyard between those dates. And in fact, some headstones were broken and others were actually pulled out of the ground, as you say, quite despicable. So on Wednesday the 3rd of January, we were aware that between 12:10 p.m. and 2 p.m, that specific time, someone entered the graveyard and pushed over a headstone, causing it to topple over. We appreciate that the time frame involved between the dates 19th of December and the 3rd of January is quite long for the number of incidents, but we were hopeful that somebody may recall some suspicious activity around the graveyard on any of the dates. So again, if anybody travelled in the area at the time and has dash cam, we ask them to make it available to Gardaí at Letterkenny. Or again, confidential line, anybody with information, 1-800-666-111. probably one.
Yeah, and if you didn't actually see it happening, it's likely, it's possible that you may have seen people there that it didn't, you know, fit what you'd expect.
Yeah, somebody
to
who's
see
not
there.
Maybe not normally at the graveyard at the time, okay. You know.
Right. Some recent thefts of industrial wheelie bins.
Yes, we have made an appeal last week, actually, Greg, in relation to two industrial wheelie bins taken from the Castle Finn area on the 17th of December. And we now have two further instances where we're making the appeals. Two industrial wheelie bins were stolen from the rear of Letterkenny Retail Park on Wednesday, the 27th of December, between 8 p.m. and 8:40 p.m. So we are interested in a sighting or dashcam footage of a white transit van that we are aware it was in the area between those times. The van is believed to travel in the area of the Polestar roundabout following the incident. So that's last Wednesday, the 27th of December. And two industrial-sized wheelie bins were stolen from a business premises in the industrial park Bridge End on Saturday, the 30th of December, between 7 p.m. and then the following day, New Year's Eve, the 5 a.m. on Sunday, the 31st. So sometime on Saturday night, the 30th of December. So again, anybody who has assistance or relevant information to contact the local Garda station. And again, in light of these crimes, we're advising businesses owners to ensure that their bins are well secured. CCTV is fully operational at all times and good street lighting.
Yeah, for sure. Just a couple of questions that came in during the course of the week. This is kind of a bit of a complex one because there's different rules at different times and what have you, but there are basics that pertain throughout the whole year. But the question is such, who is responsible for dogs on the beach? There are more dogs on the beach than ever and very few Union are on leads.
You're looking at me there. Okay, well, it's quite obvious. The person who owns the dog...
I don't know if you have a dog or not, by the way, so that was an appointed look at you.
The dog owner is responsible for the dog while on the beach. Greg's quite obvious. Under the 1986 Control of Dogs Act, all dog owners are obliged to have their dogs under what is called effectual control. This means that dogs do not necessarily have to be kept on a leash, but their owners must be able to control them at all times. Okay, some dogs under legislation must be kept on their leash by law and must wear a muzzle when out in the public. These include Bull Mastiff, Doberman Pinscher, English Bull Terrier and German Shepherd. But the general house dog that we see people on the beach with are not obliged to have a leash, are not obliged to have a muzzle, but you must have them under effectual control. If you have a dog and you're able to control it, then well and good. But if your dog is very excitable and approaches people or other animals, then this may cause considerable upset or fear for the other people or the other animal in question, even if you feel that your dog is doing no harm. So generally, if your dog is excitable and runs away from you to maybe greet or say hello to other dogs, you know, some people might be allergic to dogs, some people have a general fear of dogs. Unfortunately, the definition is your dog is not under effectual control.
Or just don't want someone else's stinky animal near
them. That's true, yeah.
Now, before we get into the variations and that, I think really, though, people are going to say, yeah, but who's enforcing it? So obviously it's the responsibility of the person, mm-hmm. Okay, but is it a council issue? Is it a guard issue? Could I ring the Milford and say, look, you know, there's someone walking the beach and they don't have effectual control of their dogs? I think that really is what it comes down to about enforcement, Eunan. Is that clear?
Well, the council if we move on to the blue flags, and we can move on to that, but in relation to effectual control of dogs, there are offences under the Dogs Act. And we, the Gardaí, have powers under the Dogs Act, the same as the dog warden in relation to not keeping your dog under effectual control. So it can be enforced by ourselves.
Right, on to the blue flag variations then.
So from the 1st of June this year, on the 15th December, dogs are prohibited from blue flag areas at 12 of our Donegal beaches between the hours of 12 midday and 7 p.m. This is under a bylaw adopted by the Donegal County Council. Outside of these restricted times, dogs are permitted and welcome in all areas of the beach. But again, their owners are required to keep them under effectual control. Assistance dogs are permitted on beaches at all times, Greg. Okay.
Right. Thanks for that, Eunan. What is the situation in relation to tinted windows or blacked out windows in cars?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's something that's very common with young males in the area at the time. So excessively tinted windscreens or front side windows present a significant safety hazard for vehicle drivers and their occupants. So your ability to see the road, see pedestrians, see other cars, is restricted by tinted windows. Visibility is greatly reduced, particularly for nighttime driving and at times of low light. So there are enforcement issues for us in Garda Síochána regarding to driver recognition, the detection of driving offences, again, holding a mobile phone while driving, and other criminal activity. So the glass in the windscreen and front side windows of a car are required to have a light transmission level of not less than 65% in order to pass the NCT test. So if you don't pass the NCT test with your tinted window, then you shouldn't be driving the car on the road. So our colleagues in the road policing unit have a equipment that's called a tint master, which measures the light on your window, and they can stop you, measure your light, and issue a summons. Now, generally what the guys are doing is they're stopping you at the side of the road. You have your tinted window. If it's not within the regulations, they're asking you to tear it off at the side of the road. They're giving you an opportunity. If you do so, you probably won't be summoned. But if you refuse to do so and you drive on, a summons will issue.
Yeah, and it's for the front windows, isn't it? The driver, passenger front seat, and the windscreen, obviously.
Yes, yes.
More so than anything. All right, listen, thank you very much for
that. No bother, Rick.
Stay where you are, Eunan, because as I mentioned at the beginning of this item, we're also in studio with Detective Garda Jared McCready, and we have some advice in relation to investment fraud and money muling. And it's important, isn't it, Jared, that people are fully aware of this? Because as we've said in the past, you know, ignorance is not a defence as such. Do you want to start with investment fraud? Maybe tell us what it looks like in the real world.
Yeah, I've got an example here, Greg, on a cryptocurrency investment scam. And it's, I suppose it's raised its head over the last number of months. There's been a few incidents that we're aware of, and I think if I give a kind of a step-by-step of the process of how the scam works, hopefully it'll raise some red flags to your listeners.
Brilliant.
Who might be in the process of investing. They might think they're investing with a genuine broker, so hopefully it'll be of some benefit to your listeners. So it's a kind of an elaborate scam, and it really has the potential to wipe out a huge portion of somebody's savings. And it relies on an app called AnyDesk or a similar apps, which is fast remote desk application. And it allows somebody to take remote control over somebody's device from a remote location. AnyDesk is a genuine app, and it is a great tool for businesses. But unfortunately, it's been abused by the fraudsters. So how the scam would work is somebody was wishing to invest in cryptocurrency. They'll often research the internet for assistance on how to invest, and in some cases they'll be asked to leave their contact details, and this is where the fraudster would contact them by telephone in most cases, and they'd be very friendly. They'd build up a relationship of trust with them, and then they'll assist them in setting up cryptocurrency accounts such as Binance, Coinbase, Crypto.com. And then they'll show them how to transfer funds from their bank account into those accounts. And nothing criminal has happened at this point. And then the investor may tell them that there's something huge happening on the markets, maybe a new cryptocurrency has been released and there's potential to earn huge amounts of cash from it. And they'd be willing to let them in on the action. And this is where the scam kind of starts. And the investor might even kind of invest maybe a small amount for them and get them a return to show, to try and make them believe that they're genuine. And once they have the person on board, this is where the scam kind of starts. They'll ask them to download AnyDesk or a similar app onto their device.
TeamViewer would be another similar one.
Exactly, there's a couple of similar ones, yeah. Excuse me. And once that's downloaded, they'll ask them for the activation code. And the activation code then allows them to take control of their device, and they'll make up some kind of a story that they want to monitor their investments to make sure they get that it works well for them. So once they're up and running, then they'll ask them to open a cryptocurrency wallet. And to open a cryptocurrency wallet, you're given 12 seed words, and that's kind of your password to get into the wallet. And the investor will be very staunch, saying, don't tell me your seed words, because I want you to know you're the only one that can access your wallet.
Yes.
But obviously, whenever they get their seed words, the person has remote access, and they're kind of spying, and they're collecting the seed words anyway. And then once they're up and running, then they'll say, right, invest as much as you can now, because this is happening. So we'll just take an example of a figure of €30,000. If somebody invests €30,000, the investor then will supply them with a link to a website, a web page, but it will be a fake web page, and it'll show €30,000, and it'll show all these graphs and figures moving about.
It's my money working.
Yeah, and it shows the money rising. But while that's going on, the investor will actually log into their wallet and take their money.
Wow.
and they'll kind of put it through a network of other wallets to hide it, kind of launder it out. And the person's monitoring their fake website, thinking it's rising and rising, and the investor will tell them, look how well it's doing, maybe you should put in more. And if they put in, say, another 20, the investor will log in again, take their money, and show their fake website rising and rising.
It's scary because the funny thing is this kind of starts often with a person with a few bob to invest.
Exactly.
Googling where to.
Yes.
They can pay for their positions higher up the search.
Exactly.
So in other words, by the time the fraudster has engaged with them, they know they've got probably something to invest.
Exactly.
And they're prepared to invest their time, like you've been outlining there.
Yeah, it takes. It's not a quick process.
Yeah.
You know, it goes on for a number of weeks.
It's even more worrying that they're prepared to put so much time in, isn't it?
Exactly, yeah. So eventually somebody's going to want to withdraw some of their investment. It might have risen from their 50,000, maybe it might be up hovering around the 200,000 mark. Yeah. And they'll go to investors, say, I want to withdraw some of my investment. And the investor will try and prolong it as much as possible, but they will say, okay, there's no problem, but there's a tax to be paid. And you can't pay your tax out of your investment because that's logged in. So you just need to maybe 10,000 tax if you just want to lodge that again. And they'll steal the 10,000, and they might come up with an insurance then. They'll keep going and keep going until the person realizes that it's been a con all along.
But the victim is seeing this chart showing their money working.
Exactly. So that's basically how it works. And just hopeful that some of your listeners, maybe if they are kind of interested in investing, just to make sure that they pick kind of regulated, reputable investment companies and not to be picking somebody off.
And to be sure that they are, because I think up until time the penny drops, these people, these fraudsters, will give you the impression that they are trusting, reputable, like that.
Exactly.
Say, you know, don't give me your seed words.
Exactly.
You know, that's for you. That, you know what I mean? Yeah, so even at that stage, you might go, right, okay, I still trust this person.
Like, they're professional, that's their job. That's how they make money, unfortunately.
And then to come back to the same well again, saying that, you know, I need the tax or the insurance, and then I can release.
Yeah, they'll keep going until the person actually realizes it's been a scam, and then they'll cut all contact. They'll stop answering emails, they'll stop answering the phone.
Yeah, and you'll think it's money in the bank and it doesn't exist anymore.
It doesn't exist and you've lost all your savings.
Okay, so that's the investment fraud. Now, money muling.
Excuse me.
Talk to us about money muling.
Yeah, money muling, I suppose the superintendent of GNECB was on the news there during the week talking about it, saying how much of a problem it is in Ireland. I myself have been going to secondary schools around Letterkenny, Balbuffet, giving presentations on just to try and make young people aware at a young age of what is happening and try and protect them from getting recruited. So basically, a money mule is a person who allows the proceeds of criminal conduct transfer through their financial account on behalf of others for a commission. So that criminal conduct can be anything, criminality, but in most cases what we're dealing with is online fraud. So they're recruited by criminals to receive the money into their accounts, and then they'll be asked to withdraw the money and get it returned to the criminal. So their bank account has been used to move the criminal funds. And even if the money mules aren't involved in the crime that generated the money, they're still illegally laundering the funds for criminal organisations. So there's three stages of money laundering. There's placement, layering and integration. So the placement is when the money comes out of the injured party's account and it's placed into the money mule account. And then it's layered then through a network of other money laundering accounts, money mule accounts, in an effort to confuse the investigation, to kind of disguise the true source of where the funds came from. And then it's integrated back into the financial system where it's withdrawn, given back to the criminal, or used to make online purchases.
It's cleaned, effectively.
It's cleaned, exactly. Yeah. So who's been recruited? The most common profiles are new arrivals into the country, the unemployed, students, and people in economic distress, and men more likely than women aged between 18 and 34 years of age.
Because it can seem like free money, effectively. Simple free money.
Yes. And most, how are they recruited? They're mostly recruited through social media apps, because he's Instagram and Snapchat, but some are convinced to act as money mules from their peers. A lot of it would be college campuses, nightclubs, schools, youth clubs. You know, that's they're being told by their peers, I got this amount of money for doing this, maybe you should do the same. And then why are they recruited? Money mules are essentially essential to the process of many types of cybercrime. Account takeover, for example, where the IP may have been the victim of a bank-related smishing attack. Resulting from this attack, then access again to the IP accounts and the funds are transferred through the money mule accounts and onto other money mule accounts until the funds are eventually withdrawn and returned to the criminal. The criminal is not going to use their own accounts for it to lead back to them, so they need the money mule accounts.
So if I'm down at a college, you know, I'm 18 years of age, someone comes up to me, what are they likely to say to me, or how is this going to be sold to me? Because it is complex, and you talk about the layering and the withdrawing and all, but the person that becomes the money mule doesn't see that. So what does that person say? What are they likely to say to you?
A lot of the examples that I would have come across would be people have been approached saying that my father is sending me money, but my account is broken.
Right?
Can I use your account? And I'll give you some money if you allow it, or.
Is it often like 1,000, 500, 2,000, or does it vary?
It can vary. It can be up to 10. So there has been cases where up to 10,000. There has been more. There has been less. But it's once that money goes into your account, if you were negligent not to carry out due process to find out where that money was coming from, in the law, I'll go into the law in a minute, but in the law that is an offence.
And they're really quite serious consequences, especially for young people and their future. So they're likely to say to me, listen, can I have your bank details? I have to lodge 1,000 into it. You withdraw it and sure you can keep 100 for yourself.
That's what's happening.
Or do you transfer it from that account? Is it generally withdrawals?
It's so prevalent, Greg, that there's so many different
variations.
Ways that have
some could be either.
In some cases, there's online purchases made, and the product then is delivered to an address that the criminal would have access to, and then go and collect the product and then sell it on, and then they have the money from the sale. It's transferred to a network of money mail accounts. Some of the money would be withdrawn in cash, got back. Some of it is wired out of the country. Some of it's put into cryptocurrency. It's just so vast of the amount of things that would happen.
And I've read some cases where the money mules gave over their cards. Was that just in the couple of cases I read, or is
no? It does happen. Like I'm aware of, one case where the person was given an address.
Yeah.
And they were asked to post their card. It was a PO box address, so they post their card and their PIN number to this address. The card was collected, and somebody went to a couple of different ATMs, withdrew all the money, even the money that belonged to the recruited money mule. They took that as well, so they just emptied the bank account.
Wow!
Yeah, so they just basically given away full control of their account to somebody else to use as they see fit.
Yeah, but these people can be desperate and trusting, and they can exploit that. But look, that, as I said, is not a defence. We are obliged to ensure that we know where money is coming from that goes into our accounts, and what are the punishments?
Yeah, the offence basically has just got the full offence here, money laundering. Contrary to Section 7 of the Criminal Justice Money Laundering, Terrorism and Finance Act 2010, is a person guilty of money laundering if they commit any of the following acts: converting, transferring, handling, acquiring, possessing, or using property that the person knows or believes, and the important part then is reckless as to whether or not the property is the proceeds of criminal conduct. So the recklessness really is the one that is there. If somebody gives away their bank account to somebody else to transfer money, it's reckless not to find out where this money is going to come from. And the maximum penalty on indictment is 14 years in prison and a fine or both. So the implications then for somebody that receives a conviction, so his conviction is huge for a young person. Employment, so they could have their employment opportunities limited and impacted upon vetting procedures. So once you're vetted, you have to give evidence of your convictions. If an employer sees you have conviction for money laundering, you might have difficulty getting a job. Bank mortgaging is a possibility that you might not be able to open new bank accounts in the future. You might struggle to get mortgages. And then travel, likes of Australia, you must declare any convictions that have a visa will not be granted to anyone deemed high risk of engaging in criminal conduct
or involved in money laundering. Exactly. Is what it would be in this instance. All right, okay.
Yeah.
Right, some sound advice, Jared. Very useful to actually get the examples as well.
Yes.
And I particularly think with that investment fraud, you can see how quickly you might think you're onto a good thing.
Exactly.
Get involved, you know.
The AnyDesk part of it is crucial. If anybody is asked to download AnyDesk, run away from it.
Right, okay.
That would be our advice.
And also the money muling, you have a responsibility to know where that money is coming from as well. Okay.
Yes.
Right, listen, thank you.
No problem.
I appreciate it. So that was Detective Garda Jerry McCready. And we also were in studio here with Garda Sergeant Eudon Walsh, who sat very patiently there. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, take care of yourselves. Indeed, it was. Okay, that was Community Garda Information. It'll be available for you to re-listen to and re-watch on our Facebook page, Highland Radio News and Sport, and the Garda Shiú Cánacha Facebook page a little later on, particularly maybe if you want to tag in some of the younger people or people that might be vulnerable to this type of criminal activity to have a look at. We're back with it live after the 10 o'clock news next Tuesday. We're joined on the programme now by Sinn Féin Deputy Padraig McLaughlin. Good morning to you, Deputy. Thank you very much for your time today.
Good morning, Greg.
I just note we got clarification from an Garda Shiú Cánacha there that both the Gardaí and the fire service responded to a report of a fire at a building on Main Street, Buncrana, shortly after 1 a.m. this morning. They tell us that all occupants of the building were evacuated to safety and a number were taken to LUH for possible smoke inhalation. Preliminary indications are that the fire started and was confined within one room within the building. So it seems that it was started from within. That's what the Gardaí are saying. But you look forward to that investigation progressing and concluding. Is there any concern that this may have been started deliberately, or what are you hearing?
No, we don't have that information. I suppose, first of all, I want to thank the emergency services for tremendous work last night. Thankfully, nobody was seriously injured, as I understand. And as you've said, a number of people were taken to hospital.
Actually, can I just add something?
Seriously.
Can I add something to it? Sorry, just to better frame your comments, Deputy, because as I say, I literally just got that press release in, and it says that preliminary indications are that this fire is unlikely to have been caused by malicious intent, which I think is just an important thing. And I don't want your comments to be framed without that information, if that makes sense. So it would appear that this is a fire that started within, and there has been some speculation that it may have been malicious, but the Gardaí's initial investigations are that it wasn't malicious. So it comes down to then, I suppose, the quick responses of the emergency services and limiting injury.
Yeah, and that's welcome confirmation from the Gardaí that the initial information is that it wasn't malicious. I think for all of us in the community in Buncrana, I mean, you know, this is an apartment, you know, high up and above the main street, and it could have been a desperate tragedy. So there's no doubt that the emergency services deserve huge credit for their hard work last night. And thank God nobody's been seriously injured, and hopefully, you know, they'll get a full understanding of how all of this happened as soon as possible.
Yeah, indeed. Okay. Now, you also have been commenting on social media about what seems like almost a mass exodus to Australia in just 1 year. I think it's over 20,000 young people primarily, but not exclusively, have received visas to work in Australia. I mean, how many of those are going to sort of experience things and better their lives and come home, and how many feel they have to leave here because there's no options for them? You seem to be putting most of the blame at the feet of the government, though.
Yeah, I think it's the numbers, Greg. You know, I mean, listen, when I was very young, I spent a number of months in Chicago, and I've seen for myself, and the vast majority of young people at that time were from Donegal in the west of Ireland. So there's always been big emigration from particularly Donegal and, of course, right down the west over the years. But in the past, that was down to a lack of jobs and opportunity. If you look at just that 1 year period from mid-22 to midway through last year, just 1 year, 21,500 of our young people went to Australia for work. And, you know, we know this because anecdotally across Donegal, you know, we're seeing the images on social media of, you know, football teams wishing their players well and, you know, the going away parties. And, you know, we knew that there was a very big numbers. But this information is quite dramatic because we haven't seen anything like this ever, actually, you know, to Australia, even in the days of high immigration.
But if you look at returning immigrants, you know, the figure is less than 1,000 if you want to balance it over the course of 2023. Do you get any comfort from that? That really, you know, between people going and people coming back, we're down about 900 if you look at the figures overall.
Yeah, you see, you know, if young people are going for life experience, that's not a bad thing at all. I think it's actually a good thing to experience another country, another culture, and to broaden your horizon. That's not an issue. But I'm absolutely convinced that the cost of rent and cost of housing in places like Donegal is now a big problem for us and is driving our young people away. I mean, if you look at rents, and you know this, Greg, I mean, rents in Donegal for, you know, a small family home have doubled, you know, over the last number of years. If you look at house prices, there's a serious crisis now, where the Society of Charter Surveyors Ireland recently revealed that to buy a three-bedroom, semi-detached new home in Donegal, a family would have to earn €85,000. I mean, I don't know too many young couples that are earning a combined €85,000, but that's where we're at. So unless we grapple with the rent, cost of rent, the cost of housing, we are going to lose more of our young people, and you know,
I see part of your, plan, your party's plan, I beg your pardon, is to drive down the cost of housing. Is that wise to effectively what you're doing is, like, there's lots of people, I'd be amongst them, I can't afford to pay into a pension, right? So really the only thing I will ever really probably leave behind me of any consequence is my property. But the Sinn Féin would like to see the value of that asset driven down. I can understand the reason why, but do you not expect there could be a pushback or a kickback from this? Because you are really effectively seeking to drive down, for what is a lot of people, their only asset, the price of it, the value of it.
Yeah, that's how it's been framed. I mean, what we've actually said is we want to build affordable housing that is genuinely affordable. So if you look at the historical way that a mortgage was reckoned, is that you would look at the combined income of the family, the annual income, sustainable income, and you multiply it by four. Now, if you do that in Donegal, I mean, the sums don't add up. I mean, the market right now, the price that's been asked for a new house in Donegal, you see it in all the estate agents, is just beyond the average income multiplied by four. So that's what we have to get to. And I was very encouraged by the opinion poll at the weekend, where a very large majority of people agreed that we need to deliver affordable housing for our families.
Well, it's the number one priority, is the reality, isn't it?
It has to be, Greg. And, you know, like we, it's a social contract. You know, this is a social contract that our young people, we say to them, you know, go away and get a university education or train up in a skill, you know, and work hard, and you will be able to put a roof over your head, you know, comfortably put a roof over your head. And we're not talking about a mansion here. We're talking about a basic family home that every family should have a right to do. And right now, you know, I'm really, really, really concerned about this, because if you look at social housing, you can't go on the social housing list if you earn over €30,000 as a family. So that those families earn over €30,000, which I would say is most families combined, can't go on the social housing list. There's no help for them there. Then they have to earn around €85,000 to buy a brand new modern home. So, you know, you can see that there's a huge cohort of young people that are in serious trouble here unless we intervene. And what does affordable housing mean? It means that you build on public land, sell at cost price, that is a realistic price for families to afford. That's an intervention made by government.
Creating a market that greatly reduces the overall value of property, you're saying that is not the party's aim?
No. What I'm saying is that we want to build affordable housing right now for families who are just priced out of the market.
Okay.
And I deal with these families all the time.
Indeed. Listen, we're going to be a minute late to the news, but I just want to ask you in relation to really strong criticism of Sinn Féin MLA Gerry Kelly. He's been accused by a judge of illegal action, using illegal action as a slap, really, which is illegal action taken to discourage legitimate scrutiny by the media and by political opponents. Your own party leader, Mary Lou McDonald's, also taken defamation action, as has other members of the party. And we've had some contact from some today saying, look, what would the media look like under Sinn Féin? Want to avoid any critique or questioning or criticism. Have you any concerns that you're litigious happy in Sinn Féin trying to stifle the media?
Well, I mean, clearly some of our TDs and MLAs, have taken cases because they believe that their reputation was damaged. In the case of Gerry Kelly, the judge has ruled, and I totally accept that decision. But it's a matter for any individual, Fianna Fáil, independent Sinn Féin Labour, any citizen, if you feel that somebody has said something that has crossed the line, that has damaged your reputation, you have a right to defend your good name. But also, if a judge decides that's not the case, I absolutely accept that.
There is always going to be, I mean, at the end of the day, it is, if you sue me, Porig, because you think that I said something that I shouldn't have said about you, it is going to potentially affect any interactions we have in the media going forward. Do you know what I mean? It's a tough old game. Politicians do at least some of them, maybe some of your party members have to thicken up the skin a little bit. We're in a very small pool of politics and journalism in this country.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I have no fear of criticism. I mean, I put my head forward as a public representative. I have no fear of it. I get it all the time. And sometimes it's justified and sometimes it's not. But the issue is that, if somebody has said an untruth and damaged my name or reputation, like any other citizen, I have a right to defend myself and take a court case. And if I win or lose, that's a matter, for the judge to decide. In this case, the judge decided Gerry Kelly didn't have his reputation damaged, but in other instances, it was a case that reputations were damaged. It's up to journalists to just make sure that they know the boundaries, they know what they can and can't say, and it's up to them to make sure they get it right and be fair. And of course they need to criticise, of course they need to hold everybody to account, but just to get that balance right.
Okay, listen, thanks for that. Always prepared to answer the questions, that I do appreciate. That's Sinn Féin Deputy Padraig McLaughlin there.